This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, just like Leicester City this season. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app. And you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
You are watching and listening to Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV on YouTube and your favourite podcasts.
Happy holidays, I guess?
Hello, Matt Elliott here.
Hi, Alan Smith here.
Hey guys, Ian Hume here.
Hi everybody, Jerry Taggart here.
Be sure to watch
Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV
for all the latest Leicester City news and information.
You can also subscribe on YouTube and various social media channels
for the latest updates and news on Leicester City.
Come on, you foxes!
On the Pitch Show with Chris and Xbox Julian Watts. Looking back at the past week at all things Leicester City.
Right, Chris.
All right there. All right the back. How are the... How the devil are we, in fact? Oh, what a night. If it's sloppy seconds, and for once it's not Julian, he'll be happy to know. I've already had my sloppy seconds. What's the third? And it's all down for that the Watford fan couldn't make it last night. I've had to squeeze three in. I tell you what, it's a record, even for me, that. In fact, I've got to be honest with you, I don't know if that's three in the night. Ask my ex-wife, it would look if it was three in a week. This is Leicester Till I Die TV, and this is where you can watch and listen to us.
Watch us on YouTube. Listen on your favorite podcast platform. Or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow, and join in now.
Oh, it's A normal, well, I say it's as normal as me and Julian can ever get, it's on the pitch show. And with these, we do tend to sort of take it a little bit outside of Leicester because it's nice to talk about other football things as well. So we're going to be talking about, is it ever right to boo your own players? I mean, they were booed recently after the Chelsea game at half-time and at full-time, and then they come back with two good performances. So is it the right way? Is it the only way that fans can really say how they feel or show how they feel? And is it, I mean, I don't agree with booing during a match. That should never happen. But I kind of get it. We will ask Julian, and does it affect the players? That's the thing. And the second question that we're going to be asking him is, Ballon d'Or. Is it just a waste of time? I mean, you know, even Celtic could win that if it was a football competition. And we might have a surprise third chat in there and obviously fans' questions at the end. But it is the X on the Pitch show and it's time for the big, big moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the main event of the evening. 60 minutes of football fun and banter with Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV. Are you ready? Ready? Let's get ready to rumble.
Good evening, Julian. How are you?
I'm very good, Chris. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. We've had a fan letter.
No way.
Well, when I say fan letter, it's from a Karen, and I don't know whether we should say that when it's from a Karen that it's a good thing or not. But it's kind of, she can't say much. She said, and she can't say her surname because prison rules don't allow her to use a surname. But I do think it's very nice of the governors at HM Prison Holloway to let these letters go out, you know. And obviously we're being viewed all over. It says, Dear Chris, love the show that you do every week with Julian, especially the Top Totty moment. It says, please, can you let us know in advance so we can order the magazines in because we don't have much to watch here and it would be lovely if we could get these magazines in. I can ask the governor if you would supply them. Well, P.S., if you could show the actual Top Totty page, that would be even better. I have to be honest with you here, Karen. I can't show the actual Top Totty page because of copyright and you know, it would be wrong. All I can do is at the start of every show, obviously, because this is growing for Julian. This is, you know, this is a sideline that's growing for him. And I can tell you sort of what magazines he's in. Women in Golf was last week. This week, he's absolutely surpassed himself here. Practical Picks.
I did use to own a pig as well, so.
Isn't that a fantastic looking pig there? So, Centre Spread as well. I tell you what, them staples must have been painful.
So listen, when Kieran's on day release, can I take her out and show him a pig?
As long as you bring home the bacon, bum bum. This is just getting silly now, isn't it? Karen, just for you, have a word with the governess. Practical Pigs. I just love some of these magazines that are out there. And of course, this is sponsored by Top Totty Beer. It's latest top. They don't know they're sponsoring it, but other beers are available just in case they actually sue me at all. So I bet you can't wait for this every week, can you?
Oh, mate, I'm just looking forward to next week now.
Well, we have gone. It's taken a bit of a dark twist, I think, this, hasn't it? You know. But hey, let's get serious. Let's get serious. We're not here to have fun. Booing the fans, it was quite obvious. You couldn't avoid it in the Chelsea game. It was there at half-time. It was there at full-time. A bit of the Arsenal game as well. I mean, is it? I mean, fans say, "Well, we pay our money. It's only right we should show how we, you know, how we feel." They don't boo during the game.
which I think is correct. I think you should never do that. But is it right ever that fans boo their own team and their own players?
It's a difficult one, Chris. I mean, I think booing during the game, I mean, like that really just, I mean, it can affect the players. It can affect certain players more than others. But as a team, you know that, you know, they feel like the support's sort of leaving you, and that's what you bank on. I mean, I always used to prefer playing away from home because you had all the idiots, forget my expression, because they were the best fans who, whatever the result, you know, just sang for 90 minutes and really backed you up. And that was something. And we've had some great away days. You know, in my time, I had a great away days, and I know the fans now. You go away somewhere and get a good result, and it's a great day, and it's even better for those fans who've paid the money, travelled, got down there, you know, whatever weather, and experienced that and just backed you up all the way. I think booing after the game, it's a different one. I suppose, you know, like they say, they pay the money.
Yes.
They want to let you know how they feel after they've paid the money, and it is their hard-earned money. And I sort of do get it, and it's never nice for the players, never nice at all. You know, even after a defeat, you want to go and clap the fans, and sometimes you do feel a bit awkward about that if you've not performed. But I suppose in my mind now, I think, yeah, they do have the right to boo. They've paid the money and you've not performed and you've lost or not got the right result. I suppose they have that right, but it still hurts the players. Still hurts the players, whatever, you know. And I've been away sometimes. You've been away somewhere or even at home, and you've worked your socks off and the result's not gone your way, and the fans appreciate that. And the nice thing is then that you've got that connection with the fans where you can go up to them and, you know, you can go and applaud them and they applaud you back because they know that you put the effort in, and for whatever reason, it didn't happen on that day. And I think the times when you get booed is when they feel like you haven't performed as a team, and sometimes that's more tactically than anything else. We've spoke about this before, about the effort that players put in on a match day, and I don't think they shy away from that. But sometimes when a team dominates you, it can look like you've not tried, but actually it's just the other team have been so much better. And the Chelsea game is a real good indication or example of that. And you can understand it on that day.
Yes, and you know, to be honest with you, you know, as a fan, I mean, I used to do this when I was younger, that I used to get the games at the start of the season, and you used to have one of those charts where you got it from the football thing, and you could stick the TV in the table and change it every week. And I'd be looking at games thinking, oh, that's a win, that's a draw, we might lose that one. And in fairness, that Chelsea game probably was one that I would probably have said it was a given, you know, the way they're playing at the moment, you know, even though the Burnley got the draw the week before, it was one that was going to be seen. So I'm just looking at Terry's comment. But, you know, sometimes, when I've watched Leicester recently, and I will never, I mean, I always say when we have the great escape season, I think I've said this before, you know, I travelled 8 hours return journey to watch a team that was sat at the bottom of the Premier League. But I know every single week they were putting a stint in. They were trying. You can see. And I'm not saying that as I said before, they're not going to go out and not try. But I'm not sure. I think whether it was the Chelsea or probably the Arsenal game, more than Chelsea, I think, is it was like watching, you know, your grandson starting on FIFA 2021 and not understanding the rules, and passes were going behind a player. You think, oh, I have a shot, and he passes it out. You know, I think that's what got to me. It was just the basics, if you like.
I think, yeah, I sort of agree with that. I think we've talked about this a lot. It's the expectations that we have on the team because of how they've performed in the past 5-6 years, you know, they've been in that high positions. And then you still think if they go to Chelsea and get beat, they're going to put up a fight and they're going to be in the game and there's going to be a scrap and we're going to have chances and we're going to have moments and we might get back into the game. And I think with that Chelsea game, it was like, you know, it was like a fighter fighting someone who wasn't even at the races and, you know, didn't even have a chance of knocking him out. And it just looked so bad. It looked like we were so far away from where we'd been. And you know, I sort of get that with the supporters on that particular game. Maybe the Arsenal game a little bit. And again, we've had a couple of games where it doesn't seem like we competed. And I think we said this last week, is that fans always appreciate when you get a tackle in, when you get close to someone. Yeah. And when a team passes around you and you don't get anywhere near them, and you're just a few seconds behind them and they're passing out, which Chelsea did absolutely brilliantly, you know, against Man United the other day without getting the result. But at times they really pass the ball well. And we want people, you know, we want us as a team to be competitive. And when you don't look competitive, I think that's when the fans have had enough and they want to vent their frustrations, because, you know, it's a men and boys situation, and we're the boys, and we don't like to see that in comparison to what we've done in the last few seasons.
I mean, they say that they don't, but do you think players ever sort of do read? I mean, I understand, and I would never, no matter how bad a player has been or performed, like I say, I know that he's not gone out purposely to do that, but he has had a bad game, but I would never go onto his personal social media and post, you know, some of these disgusting posts that are. But I've got this vehicle here that we sat here that I can say in the post-match show. Do you think sort of the players ever actually go on to some of the sites and have a look and think, let's just see what they're saying about me after that game?
Yeah, but I'm sure they get notifications as well, and it is a terrible thing. So, again, you know, Chris, you've got this vehicle that we're both using tonight, but we're talking, you know, in a different sort of level, and we all know and we've all heard of the absolute horrible levels that are talked on social media, and it's that thing is, you know, would you close your account down? Why would you have an account? Because, you know, the social media bit, when it started, it was always a bit of fun and it was a bit of contact. And, yes, you know, I'm in contact with people I've not seen for years, and that's all a fantastic thing. But when you're in the spotlight, it then becomes this negative thing where you get people not just saying that you've had a bad game today, but it goes a lot deeper and a lot worse, yes, than that. And the, yes, problem we've got with social media is that no one's accountable. You know, I personally think that anyone who joins as a Twitter account or as an Instagram, Facebook, whatever, you know, their address should be on there. Their IP address should be on there. They should be contactable. And if they're not, they shouldn't be allowed to have an account, because they're not accountable for what they say and do. They sit there, keyboard warriors, absolute cowards who call people out, and, you know, they've never done anything, you know, never had a day's work in their life, or never done anything in their life. And yet they sit there and feel like they can sort of spout off. And I think that's just a vile part of society that we live in now. But unfortunately, it seems that we have to accept it, because the social media sites don't want to get down into that nitty gritty of, you know, who you are and where you're from. And they can just anonymously, you know, post whatever they want. And that's not right. The social media that we sort of got into, as we all have done, was a bit of fun. And it's become not fun. And it's become a real sort of bad part of society. And it seems at the minute that, you know, they're not strong enough to really do anything to resolute that.
I think they don't want to. I think that's what it's down to. Because, you know, they're thinking about money, of the numbers.
All the time, Chris. All about money.
Yes, yeah. It so is. And like I say, I don't agree with that personally. You know, if I'm, you know, if I'm watching a game and I know that, you know, and it might be Perez, but you know, he hasn't had a particularly good game, then I feel I'm within my right to say Perez didn't play well today. He was bloody awful. But then on the other side, you've got to say he's had a good game today. If he has played well, give him the praise he deserves. But I mean, I wasn't at the games, although I am going to Southampton tomorrow. But would the manager use that and sort of, you know, when he got them in, say, at half time, said, have you heard what that, you know, that's what they think of you? Are you going to let them get away with that? Would he use it psychologically?
Yeah, Martin definitely would have done. But the thing is, I'm going back, you know, 20-odd years, Chris. It's a different environment now. I would have said they probably would have mentioned it now. But Martin definitely would, you know. And even if the crowd weren't booing, he'd be saying, you know, are you going to serve that up again for all these people who've put all this money to come and watch you and paid good money to watch you? Are you going to go and put that out again this second half, or are you going to pull yourselves together and go and do something about it and get yourselves back into the game? So definitely would have been used in our time. I think it probably would be now, but like we say, we've got this other side of it that's, you know, quite naughty, if I'm honest. But you know, like Martin would have definitely touched on that, and we would have all been conscious of it as players. You know, there's probably games where, and I don't remember the Leicester fans doing this, because we actually, I think I always feel like we did sort of overachieve. So even when we had bad days, they really weren't that bad with us. And we sometimes had some bad days, but I feel like us as a team, I always knew if we had a bad day, we knew we'd had a bad day. And we were actually quite, you know, we were sorry about it. We'd go to the fans and clap and looking at them thinking, you know, we're really sorry about this. But I don't remember us having days like this when we got booed, even after games, because we gave them that many good days that, you know, the bad days they could take on the chin, if you like.
It is. And like you said earlier, it is expectations. We expect more because of what they've done for the last two seasons. But I can't remember ever seeing a game when Martin O'Neill was manager when they didn't sort of give 100%, or you guys didn't give 110%. So I don't think Martin would have allowed that. He will tell you, I'm sure, the exact time and when he got booed after Sheffield United. Yeah. I think that's ingrained in his mind. But I can imagine Martin using that as a G-up, even just for himself.
Yeah, he did. You know, and I think, if my memory serves it correctly, we went down to Charlton the Tuesday night afterwards, and it was a big conversation about, you know, that can't happen again. You know, but you know, then we had Walshy back and we had one or two more back, and Muzzy started the game against Charlton and we won 1-0. And I'm sure, and I might be wrong, I'm hoping I'm not wrong, but I'm sure that was the game after the Sheffield United game. And it really galvanised us, to be honest. We all knew what the gaffer had gone through. We knew he'd invited the fans into the, you know, into his office. We knew all the, you know, the, excuse my language, but shit he'd had to take that day. He was having a bad time as it was. You know, the expectations then were different than they are now. I mean, now they're absolutely massive. But at that time, it was like, we should be looking at this top six, you know, championship place. And we could all feel that. I mean, and personally, God, I had an absolute stinker on my debut for a new club. And for me, it was like a fish out of water. It was my first time going from a club to go into someone else's first team. When I left Rotherham to go to Wednesday, I was going to be developed in the reserve team. I'd left Wednesday to come to be a first team regular in a Leicester team and had an absolute nightmare on my debut, which nobody wants. And you want to put that right. And I think that was right through the team. We all wanted to put it right. Muzzy, differently, just wanted to go out and perform because he was like chomping at the bit to perform. And that's where, you know, that galvanizes a team. And we kicked on from there. And Martin definitely used, you know, the scenario of that Sheffield United game. And obviously, you know, it resonated with myself because of performance and who we'd played against and lost against. So, yeah, you know, it was a big factor.
I think as well, I think obviously you boo opposing players. You know, we all remember the reception Harry Maguire got recently, you know, although they could have just been booing his performance. It was that bad. But you know what I mean? But I think with the way that they booed, and like I say, I think to a point it is acceptable when the match is not actually being played. I think by doing it like that as well, they're not singling out any one player.
Again, I don't
agree with that because it's a team game, you know, and anybody can have an off day, so you accept that. But when the team as a whole performs badly, and whether that's from doing what the managers told them or not, that's when, to me, you know, it's acceptable because you're not picking on one particular person.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, Chris. I think, like, if you booed an individual of your own team, you're absolutely killing him on the day of the game. And if you're just booing him during the game, you know, the players hear that and all of a sudden, and like I say, we've mentioned this many a time, it stops you doing what you're good at because you become frightened to do what you're good at because, you know, if you make a mistake, the crowd are on your back and then it stops your natural game and it stops what you're good at. And then if you stop in five or six players being what they're good at, you know, the team's performance is just going to go down and down and down. So, you know, during the games, it's definitely not for me. And as fans, you're really having such a negative impact that you probably don't realise. I think a lot of fans think that, well, the footballers, they're used to it. Water off a duck's back, you know, we're booing and we're letting know how they feel and they should just get on with it. It really does affect performances of individuals and then performances of teams. And then you're having a negative impact on the team that you're supporting. So during a game, I really, really don't get it. I think it's just, you know, a bad thing that fans need to understand. But I do think that after games, you know, if it's a bad performance and you're on a string of bad ones, you know, I suppose they get the right, you know, they go out and earn money every week and they're buying season tickets. And, you know, if you take your missus and your two kids, you know, it's got to be 100 quid plus. And I think you sit there and think, I've got the right to sort of vent my anger, and especially if they're underperforming, you know, so that there is that factor to it.
I think to me, that's what it was. And it's funny. I mean, I guess as an opposing player, going back to your old club, depending on how you left the club, but you're always going to get booed, especially if you like with Maguire, he's gone to a bigger club. So that I would imagine as the opposing player, because I always hate booing the opposing players, as I'm thinking like, this is going to come back and bite us on the arse. So that's, you know, I think that's, you know, that's acceptable. I think that goes on all the time. But it's just surprising that since that performance, we've had two. And it's not the fact that we've had two wins. We've had two good performances.
Yeah. You know, yeah, we have. And I'm, you know, again, I still think we've not found the right shape and formation. You know, I know on Saturday you change it again and it worked. But, you know, I'm still not sure what he's going to do the next game and the next game and the next game. So I still think that's a little bit up in the air. But, you know, the weekend was a fantastic performance in difficult conditions where your key players, Maddison, performed well. Vardy, you know, was just what we talk about, Vardy, you know, week in, week out. So, you know, that worked out for us. I'm still unsure about, you know, what direction we've got, because it feels like we're still not decided what's the best way forward. But on Saturday, we invited Barnes and Luckman in, two fantastic players for me, very exciting players. Is it still the right way to play? Like I say, it worked that day. I think we'll probably persevere with that until it goes wrong, and then we might look at something else. I would rather see us, you know, a bit more settled, and I don't think we are settled still.
No. But I mean, that just to touch on that European result, you know, as you know, I write the Tuesday talking point on BBC Radio Leicester's page, and I put there, like, what a difference a week in football can make. You know, this time last week, it was all doom and gloom. We were bottom of our European group, looking at an early exit or even possibly the conference. Now, it's in our own hands. We could actually go through top of the league, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I can say, I suppose it depends on the player, you know, and I can't say as much as I'd like to that, oh, yeah, the fact that they got booed made the players think, right, we're going to go and show them. I suppose it depends on the individual player, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the European result was a great result. I think we sat last week and we said we ended the show, you know, sort of saying, you know, what a difference this week could make. You know, we've got Watford, which could be a real banana skin. We've got the European game before that. We've come through with flying colours, which is absolutely fantastic. You know, I still want to see more of Daka. I think he excites me a lot, and I think he should be introduced a lot more. But it's just that thing of the formation and are we settled? You know, getting a great result doesn't mean that, you know, we've turned the corner. And I'm not sure we have. But again, you just take the results as they come at the moment. And two great results. You know, get a result against Napoli, we can actually, you know, we can top the league. When, you know, a few weeks ago, I was thinking, and we said, you know, we could actually be bottom of the league, and we look like we could top it, even though it's going to be a difficult game. We're more than capable of going over there and getting the right result. And then we've just got to keep this, you know, this league form on. And again, you know, we touched on last week, we were so many points, I think we're 6 points off Champions League, but 6 points off relegation, and it's like, which way do we go? Do we stick with twist? And we've won the game against Watford, and all of a sudden the future looks a little bit brighter than it did.
And we
now need to, you know, sort of kick on from this.
On the plus side, it was nice to see the reception Claudio got.
Yeah, amazing. You know, and listen, we should never forget what he did. You know, I'll always say, and because he's an old teammate of mine, I thought Nigel Pearson did an absolutely fantastic job to the latter parts of that season and really put a solid foundation in there. But, you know, would Nigel have won the Premier League? We'll never, ever know that. But Claudio came in and actually did it. And that is where we just go, God, you know, well done. What a season. Big, big thanks. And he got an absolutely fantastic, you know, reception. And quite rightly so. And, you know, he's going down in history and folklore, you know, as a legend of the club. And you know, he steered us right through that season to the title. And like I say, it was nice to see. It was nice that he seems like a very humble man, and he was so emotional yes. about it, and he got a bit upset, yeah. which is absolutely lovely, you know.
Yeah.
See someone yeah. coming. It wasn't just a job to him. He feels part of the club, and you know that's.
I don't think he. The first time he'd been back since the sacking, apart from yeah. obviously he did come for the game following the chairman's yeah. passing, but of course that wasn't a time to welcome anybody back and what have
no,
you. But
no.
It was nice to see. He's a very humble guy. I always, and I think it's the funny thing is people have slowly accepted Nigel's part in that, because I don't think had Nigel not done what he'd done the season before, I don't think that Claudio would have gone on and won that. I think the combination of the two, it was a perfect storm.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Chris. Like you say, you know, Nigel could have stayed, took that season on. We'll never, ever know. He might not have won the league. And it, like you say, but I definitely think he deserves a massive, you know, recognition for, you know, I think in the last 10 games, I'm sure they had the best form in the Premier League in the last 10 games.
Yeah,
and that is an absolute foundation for a new manager to come and build on, where you can come in and see that there's potential there. But then we have to give Claudio, you know, the recognition for him continuing that. And listen, he carried it through and went and did it. And it's unfortunate, you know, the way the next season turned out. And I think for me, in that season, Leicester were a surprise to everybody. The way we played, we had a stoic defence that sort of sat back a little bit, and Vardy was always looking on the break. And we had a few players that people wouldn't have even heard of or known about that performed unbelievably well. And we surprised everyone. And then that's the problem. The next season, you're not a surprise. And that's when it becomes hard work for the manager. And that's where people like Pep Guardiola, despite, you know, the tons of cash that they have, and Jurgen Klopp, again, the tons of cash, Tuchel as well to an extent, is that's where I think they're paid the big money and they're at the big clubs, because they reinvent themselves every season. Pep's definitely done that. And I think Klopp has as well. And Tuchel, again, looks like the real deal. So, which what makes, you know, the Premier League good. But unfortunately, you know, Claudio couldn't, you know, sort of reinvent Leicester as a team and get the results that we needed.
And we send all our best on to Nigel, who's not, you know, 100% health-wise at the moment. So our thoughts and best wishes go to Nigel, as indeed they do to Terry, who is, and you have my sympathy here, is that he had his COVID booster and he's totally knackered. I tell you what, funny thing is, I had my booster last weekend, not the one just gone, the one before, and it was Pfizer, which was the two I had before for one and two, and I was completely out of it. Whether it was because I had the flu jab at the same time, I don't know, but completely didn't sort of even get out of bed for a couple of days. It was the weirdest thing. But David, senior question, we'll come back to that at the end when we do the fans questions. But and I've got to be careful I don't bring up Pig Weekly or whatever it was again, haven't I, here. We'll have a look at this now. The Ballon d'Or, put there, is it becoming a joke? I think you just look at it now and you know, it's caused a bit of a stink this year, for some reason more than others. But Messi, I mean, he's won it 7 times, Ronaldo 5. I mean, are they? I mean, I know they're good, but come on, 7 times. And you know, he didn't play for quite a bit of the season, Messi, between changing clubs and what have you.
I think for me, it's never been a joke until this point, if I'm honest. But right now, you know, I'm in work today talking to people, I'm talking to other mates, and we're all saying, how has he won it? You know, and that's the problem. And I think we've had in Messi and Ronaldo two unbelievable. It would be like an era with Pele and Maradona, you know, vying for a Ballon d'Or. It would have been like, what a competition that would have been. And probably no one else would have come into the offing, quite rightly. And we've had the same thing with Messi and Ronaldo. And they are two absolute, you know, legends of the game, top of the game. And they have been for years. But I feel with them both right now that they've probably just gone over the top of the hill. You know, Messi's not particularly gone to Paris Saint-Germain and lit the world up. And Ronaldo's actually scored the goals, obviously didn't play at the weekend, and we could all see his disappointment. But, you know, the neither, even though they have still got that quality, I don't think either of them have got the energy that provides that quality to make them the best players. You know, and I think now we're both going to probably discuss in a minute other players who we probably think would, you know, have won that award instead of them. Because, like I say, ability-wise, fantastic. Both, for me, past the sell-by date.
Yeah. I mean, if I was to say to you how many Ballon d'Or, and I have trouble saying this, I'm going to try that in my teeth in. Ballon d'Ors. I've had to write it out phonetically here, so I don't know how to say it. Ballon d'Ors. How many Ballon d'Ors Pelly win?
I'm taking it was a zero, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a zero. Yeah. Eusebio got one. Johan Cruyff, and you know, we're talking a good player here, got three.
Yeah.
You know, Van Basten, three. Kevin Keegan, two. Eusebio, one. You know, classic players. Ruud Gullit, one. Zinedine Zidane, one. All these players we're looking at as a Ronaldo and Messi, that much better than they were in their day. I don't think they were.
No, I mean, I think when you're talking about the list there, I've got a couple of funny ones, really, because I don't think Keegan was, like, blessed with ability, but he had that low centre of balance. He obviously did well. He went over to Hamburg, and he was, like, fantastic. Mm. He was amazing for England. Went to Newcastle later in his career. Was amazing. You can see why, you know, he might have got it in those years. Johan Cruyff was, you know, on a different sort of level to his time, a different level. Yeah. You know, to everybody else. But I think, as I've just said, the battle between the two has been fantastic, but that battle should have probably ended maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, if I'm honest, but it definitely shouldn't have carried on to this year. And I'm not sure when it runs to and from and what season it relates to that Messi's got it. But for me, it's so undeserving. And I think it's a bit of an embarrassment on the actual trophy itself that he's got it, because it's so undeserving, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because he's been a legend for years and years and fully deserved all the accolades he's had, and you know, and all that kind of stuff. But right now, he's not that player. He's become a good player in a good team, whereas before he was the superstar in a great team. And I think that's the difference we've got now, and that's why I can think of a couple of players off the top of my head now that deserve it far more than either Ronaldo or Messi this year.
I'm just looking here. Apart from 2019 and this year, every single year since 2007, it's been one of them first and one of them second. Mm. Virgil van Dijk got it. He came second last season. It can't be. It's got to be a year, hasn't it? Because we're in December, so it can't be a season, surely. No. The one they're saying that deserved it more, Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, I mean, straight away I'd go to him. You know, he scored a great overhead kick last week. And it's that thing of he's getting older and older as well, but he just seems to be performing better and better. And the others that I thought about were, and I'm not saying, you know, definites, but not they don't seem to get any, consideration around the other two. But, you know, Jorginho has just won the European Cup with Italy. And, you know, for me, I think I felt he was a bit of a soft midfielder, but could play maybe under Lampard, or before that. But then when Tuchel's come in, he looks a bit keener, a bit harder. He manages games better. I think he's an absolutely fantastic player. And the other one is like Mo Salah, and I'm like, you know, what a absolute season or two he's had, or three or four even, and you know, to score all the goals he scored and the way that he scored, he's like goal of the month every month on Match of the Day or thereabouts, and you know, a wonderful player. You could even go Sadio Mane and you know, people like that, and it just seems like it's concentrated on those. And then you start to think, is it political? And if it's political, then you know, it's not worth winning for me. It's there's got to be far more consideration, you know, a bit broader spread.
And it's not even anymore a FIFA award. FIFA do their own. It was for a while the FIFA Ballon d'Or, but it's actually just a French magazine that produced it. I mean, why it's got as big as it is, I don't know. But I mean, this how they do the scoring, because he won this season with 613 points, Lionel Messi. Robert Lewandowski got 580. and Jorginho was third. So there was no Ronaldo in there at all with 460. And I just, like I say, I just can't see whether it was because he went to Paris Saint-Germain and they're French. Allegedly, that might have had an effect on it. I don't know. I have to remember that word. It's very important, you know. But I just, you know, I look at it now and I'm thinking, like, what does it matter? You know,
I think you might have just touched on it, Chris. You know, it's a French magazine award and he's just gone to Paris Saint-Germain. And he has been a legend. You know, we can all say we've all watched him and, you know, some of the stuff he's done over the years has been like unbelievable. What a phenomenal player he's been. But, you know, right now he's coming to the end of his career. He's, you know, he's lucky to be where he's at, or not lucky. You know, he's still got the ability, but he's definitely not the player he was 3 or 4 years ago. And neither is Ronaldo. But Ronaldo is still performing to a high level, scoring all the goals for, you know, for Man United, and probably been a saver a few times this season for them.
Yes.
But he's not the Ronaldo of, you know, when he first signed for Juventus and when he was at Real Madrid and, you know, when he left. I always thought the first few years at Man United, they did ever so well with him because he was very, it was so frustrating. He wasn't the final piece there, but he had the potential. And I really feel that Man United really brought that potential out of him, made it the player that he's actually gone on and to be. But he has got that real strong mentality that he's wanted to improve himself continuously. But I thought the grounding he had at Man United really was the platform that made him, or helped him make himself, you know, be the player that is. But he's certainly not that player now, and he's not the player he was 4 years ago. So yeah, it's a frustrating. And then I think the thing that we've both just touched on is that, you know, do we look at that award anymore and think it stands, you know, anyone in good stead? Because we both think, well, this year's been a bit of a joke. So does it matter who gets it next year? Because, you know, what, you know, how's that decision made? And do we really give it any credence? You know, that's the problem with that now.
I'm going to test you again here now. Because I know you were around in 1956 regularly. Do you know who the first ever winner of the first ever Ballon d'Or? Oh, here we go. I did it again. Ballon d'Or winner was
56. I wouldn't know, and I'm thinking, like, so I mean, the players I know are from the World Cup, which would have been, you know, the 66 World Cup, which would have been Eusebio and players like that. And Pele was just getting on the scene then, so
I would never have bowed down
to your superior knowledge, Chris, on this occasion.
And my fact that I've got a second screen here with the answer on. But it does make me look clever, you know. No, the first ever one was Stanley Matthews.
Bloody, honestly, would never have got that.
No.
But what a fantastic thing.
Yeah. And second was Di Stefano, which I think was the Real Madrid goalkeeper, I believe. Yeah. Could be wrong. And Raymond Coppa from Real Madrid. A lot of Spanish clubs up there. Billy Wright was second the year after, with Duncan Edwards joint third. Wow. So we've had a few Brits in there, we shall see where it goes. I think it's been a bit of a stink this year, definitely. I think so. Maybe if it's going to happen, it'll happen next year. Possibly, you know, but we're going to fit a third one in because we've got a bit of time, if you're okay with that, Julian. Yeah, and we'll be straight back after this.
Leicester Till I Die TV, your first choice for everything Leicester City. Tune in and join in now.
We weren't going to do this, but I thought, why not just touch on it quickly? Because there's nothing like having to go at another team when they're struggling. Some would say that they're doing it correctly, but I've got it here. Manchester United, how far as an iconic club have they fallen? I mean, to me, Man United, and I'm going to give them some credit here, they're one of the biggest clubs in the world. They're a worldwide club that players and managers should be dying to go to. You know, it's like, you know, you get a call, it's Man United. And there's not many clubs like that. Obviously, Barcelona, Real Madrid as well. Maybe not Norwich, in fairness to them, but yeah, they are absolutely, and you can't even say that about Manchester City. They haven't got the history or this team that Man United have got. What are they doing? I mean, they had a manager who was an ex-player that, let's be honest with you, got them into Champions League for the last couple of seasons. He dug them out the shit when, he took over for Mourinho and he got the players playing again. He got them to second. He got them to a final, the Europa League final, and missed out thanks to about the 500th penalty. Obviously, he couldn't handle the big stars. It wasn't going well. So they sack him and put in a temporary manager who was his coach, his assistant manager, who was part of the team that were causing the problem. And now they've gone and appointed an interim manager when surely they should be sat there waiting for the phone to ring and people ringing them up and going, can I have the job? Can I apply? How do I apply?
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. I think, God, there's a lot of things I can say on that. I never thought Solskjaer was the man. I thought he came in and lifted the mood when the mood was really low. Mourinho, especially with his attacks on Luke Shaw, the way he talked about the team, the players. And we all know that Mourinho's styles, I don't want to say negative because he's been a super successful manager, but he is more about stopping the other team than winning the game. And I've always said that. Klopp and Pep go and win the game. Mourinho stops the other team and then tries to go and nick something. And it's a total different management style, but we can't deny that he has been a super successful manager, you know, just about everywhere he's been. So there is that. But I never thought Ollie was the man. He came in and just made it a happy place to be again, and it wasn't a happy place. And that in itself is a big lift to the players. New guy comes on board, we're all chatting, we're all good, the training ground's a happy place, and that showed in the performances. And then, funnily enough, when he got the job, then it all went, you know, started to go a bit awry, and that was a sign of what was to come. I think one of the biggest problems they've had is they've had probably one of the greatest managers that we'll ever see in our lifetime.
Yes.
Who came and for such a long time was dominant, and, you know, we'll come to that when he was going to retire and he had a really bad season. He decided not to retire and then just came back stronger and stronger. And that's when I talked to, you know, a few moments ago saying about Klopp and Pep who can reinvent themselves. Ferguson came back, reinvented the wheel, brought players in. I remember the season he brought Van Persie in and, you know, it was a bit strange that it was 29 at the time, but he came in and, God, what an important piece of the jigsaw he was. And he got rid of Jaap Stam and, you know, Nistelrooy, who we thought was a legend, but he had a best before date as well. That was just such a massive, massive part of, you know, probably the last 20 years of Manchester United. And that the thing is now, who can follow that? And no one's been able to follow it because it's been an absolute chasm to come into.
Yes.
And David Moyes, I think, said this on the show before, would have licked his lips because he was doing so well at Everton and thought, oh, and Ferguson recommended him. But did he know what he was coming into? And would he, you know, looking back now, would he have took the job? I probably think he'd say no. You know, his career's gone on and he's had a few mishaps and he's doing ever so well now at West Ham and he's proving that he's a great coach and a manager. But would he have done that again at the same time that was offered it? I'm not so sure, but maybe Man United is too difficult to turn down. Maybe if they come knocking. But exactly what you've said, Chris, is right now, you know, they shouldn't be waiting to, like, you know, wheedle out the right manager. They should have agents screaming, saying, I have got the man for you. And it doesn't seem like they have. And whether the best people are in jobs, you know, obviously Pochettino is one of those, or, you know, contractually. But, you know, they brought in this guy who apparently a very good coach, but we're just going to have to wait and see how it unfolds. But to bring someone in for 6 months, it's a really weird thing for, like you say, one of the biggest clubs in the world to do. And it is quite puzzling, to be honest, and doesn't send out the right message to the fans.
No, I don't think it does at all. I mean, you know, it makes you wonder, and I don't think it's going to be Rodgers, to be honest with you. I mean, he's come out and said he doesn't want it anyway again. He said that. He seems to be saying that every week about one club or another. but then again, you know, you look at, and I said this to a Manchester United fan, you know, you've sacked Ollie, who's got you into two Champions League seasons when we'd failed. You know, you got to second and fourth. Both times you were above us. Would you then go and say, oh, yeah, but, you know, Rodgers has won the FA Cup and he's won the English Super Cup, and as I like to call it.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? whether it's going to be him, but... And I don't think Rodgers would leave. I don't think Rodgers dare leave mid-season again after what he did at Celtic. But I do think another manager, if they said, look, it's now or never, if you want to come and get this job, you come now, you should not be even taking two thoughts about it. You're going to go, this is Manchester United. Yes, I'm coming. You know, and what does this Ragnarok? I always think of Thor Ragnarok or whatever it is. This Ragnarok, yes, he seems to be very good, and he may move up into a director of football role. I don't know, but are they going to give him money in January? Because if he is he going to be buying players that 6 months later the new guy comes in doesn't want? Which obviously happens if you sack a manager anyway, but not when you're planning.
And I think it's a strange one, and I'm not sure they can give him money in January because. What if they do and he's only there for 6 months? How do you give a manager that time? I think for me, the conversations, and this is just me, you know, surmising, would be more about this is the squad we've got. What can you do to steady the ship? And I think that's all he's coming to do, steady the ship. You know, apparently from all the comments you see from his peers, I know Tuchel played under him and I know Klopp's come up against him and they all talk very highly of him. He's a big thinker. He's a very organised, high presser, which is, you know, something that I think, I'm not sure how many United players, well, there are going to be some big names that don't really take to that. So that's going to be a difficult one. But the fact that he's so organised, and I think he just comes in to stop the rot, steady the ship. You know, they've probably given up on the season. They'd hope for a Champions League place at best. Other than that, might be Europa League. But I don't understand how they can bring in or let him sign a big player, knowing that at the end of the season they're looking at bringing someone else in, unless behind the backs of everyone they're consulting this manager and saying, if we bring him in, is that all right? And that's just so wrong in every, you know, in every manner of what you expect of behaviour in the big club.
Totally. And I mean, you know, there was the game, wasn't there, at the weekend where it wasn't Carrick, but one of the other coaches had an earpiece in, and they reckoned whether Ragnarok, whatever he's called, was sending messages. I mean, surely Michael Carrick wouldn't have dropped Ronaldo. Was that there? Was this Ragnarok saying, "I'm going to put my foot down. You're going to see who's the boss. You're not playing."
Do you know what? I honestly don't know, Chris, but I'd be amazed if that was. Right. Having said that, it's a massive, massive call for Carrick. So then you do start to wonder. And then we saw, Darren on with the earpiece in.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, but you know, you never know. For me personally, I was thinking that can't be it. That can't be the reason. They've come here with a game plan. They want to press. You know, Ronaldo's not really a presser. But having said that, you know, I don't think Fernandes is. So I would have played Ronaldo and had a drop Fernandes if it was me.
Yeah.
And just said to Ronaldo, you stay up top and we're going to press behind you. But then, you sort of have to think, they've already named him. Is he coming in? I couldn't see it, but then I can't sort of 100% say it wouldn't be.
No,
happened, you know, it's a real, real difficult. I'd be disappointed if that was the case, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
You know, I think Carrick did a great job against, you know, Villarreal in the week. Got the win. And for me now, when they brought this guy in, I felt personally like, why not? I know Carrick's been in part of the team, but are you always allowed to express what you want? You know, you could be an assistant manager with your views on things, but you actually need to back the manager up. And if you're a good assistant manager, that's what you do. So are they, you know, have they always like backed up what Ollie's philosophy is and how he wants to do things? And when he's got the opportunities, he's gone, do you know what? I wouldn't have done it like that. And I can see the players. I work with them every day. This is how I'm going to do it. Why wouldn't you leave him in charge for 6 months? Or if not, say that you're looking for an interim manager, but really just go, Michael, you know, steer us into a good place. Let's see how it goes. See how you do. And we're going to be looking at, you know, the future ahead of you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that's not the case. But you know, if this guy's as good as they say he is, they're bringing him for 6 months. If he steadies the ship, and then he's going to be a consultant. But how do you feel as a manager coming in that knowing you've got a consultant who's just managed the team? It all really is Mickey Mouse for such a
It's a bit of a mess, isn't it, really?
It's a massive mess.
Maybe Rio would turn around and say, Carrick's at the wheel. Give him the job now. We've not lost him too, you know. And just going back to what you're saying, you know, we're talking about signings and what have you. Who could you buy that would improve that team? When you look at it, and you know, you could argue that it's a team of individuals rather than a team, but they've got huge names there. You know, even Maguire, and you know, yes, he's having a bad season so far, but we know from the last couple of seasons, you know, he struggled when he first went there. Now he's had a couple of good seasons. Now he's struggling. So we know he's a good player. So they've got, you know, world-class players, internationals in virtually every position. Surely you can't go and add anything to that. So no, maybe, like you said, maybe they've said, this is what you've got to work with, make them better for 6 months.
Yeah, I can't see him bringing anyone else in. And again, if he's not bringing anyone else in, which you couldn't see the point of him doing if he's there for 6 months, but you then can't see him weeding people out if he's only there for six months, because that is exactly what I think needs happening there. I've been saying it a long time that whatever ability Paul Pogba's got, which is fantastic, he's got so much ability, but for me, I mean, it looks like he's going to leave on a free now. I would have offloaded him 6 months ago, a year ago, because he should dominate a game of football. Every time he walks on that pitch, he's got the ability and the physique to dominate a football match every time he walks on that pitch, no matter who he plays against. And he does it in little tiny pieces, and then everyone raves about him. And for me, it's not enough for the ability that he's got. So he's one that I would have farmed out. The Van der Beek's always been a puzzle. You know, why did you not use him more? He was a great player at Ajax. I sort of watched him the week.
Paid 40 million for him or whatever.
Yeah, I watched him against Villarreal, and he was sort of, I was wanting him to press harder. I'm thinking, mate, you've just got your opportunity and you're just jogging around the pitch, but maybe that's how they'd been asked to play. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but been a fantastic player. You know, Fred, constant frustration, you know, it needs someone to go in and go, you know, Matic been a great player, a few massive clubs, pull him out, pull Fred out. McTominay, maybe, you know, persevere with, get Van der Beek in there. Let's look at Manchester United going forward. And right now, they're still mixing and matching what I would call the old guard. And they definitely need a centre-back or two. And I'm not including Harry Maguire in this. I think Lindelof's not at the races. Bailly's not at the races. You know, and there's a massive weakness there that they need to, you know. But again, this new interim manager, I don't think has got the authority to sort that out, because in 6 months' time, he's not in the job. Yes. So what is it? For me, he's coming in, they're saying, this is the squad, steer us to the end of the season. And I think that's, like you say, for one of the biggest clubs in the world, is someone just going to come and take the tiller, you know, for a small amount of time without having the authority in a massive transfer window to make a decision. It'd be interesting to see what they do.
Say hi to Ankit there, Almighty Blues FC. Apparently, it's 3 a.m. over there in India. Thank you for tuning in. I know when it's the Blues, it's not the Blues of Leicester. Well, not officially, it's the Blues of Chelsea. But I think deep down, it is the Blues of Leicester. You are, I mean, because we are the FA Cup winners. Let's be honest with you, Ankit. And who did we beat? Chelsea. But I'm just thinking, he loves me rubbing that in. He loves me. And yes, I know you won the Champions League, but you didn't beat us in the Champions League. We beat you in the FA Cup final. Love you, Ankit. Love you. But I think with Man United, it's a bit like you said, previous to Ferguson, they had a football team. And it might come as a shock to a few Man United fans. They did have a football team before Ferguson. And honestly, with you, it wasn't that brilliant. You know? And they're trying to, you know, it took Liverpool. And Liverpool were the Ferguson Man Uniteds of their day. Yeah. And they took them 30 years to get back to winning anything again. And, you know, Man United and Arsenal are a little bit the same as well. You know, it's been a couple of seasons and they're crying into the beer. Mm. Are they trying too hard? Instead of rebuilding, are they just trying to stick plasters on everything and carry on. And
yeah, I mean, I think with, you know, they need to be prepared to keep, you know, to have a bit of patience with someone, but they need to have a bit of patience with the right man. And, you know, for me personally, I don't think all the patience in the world with Ollie would have done them any good, because
no,
I don't think he was the right man. I think they need to do their own work, bring in the right man. I mean, for me at the minute, I can't see anyone past Pochettino, if I'm honest. I think he's got the pedigree. You know, he's been in the big jobs. I think the one slight on his CV is that he came into Tottenham and they were on this upward sort of trend, and then it sort of fell away. And you felt like, you know, he's the manager like Klopp or Guardiola when he didn't really seem to be able to pick that back up again. Yes. And that would be the one thing where I'd go, ooh. But if he'd got the backing, you know, of the club, and he's got the, you know, inherited some players and brought some players in, I certainly think he'd be an interesting, you know, selection for that. But it's right, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, Liverpool were absolutely massively dominant. And then, but then Wenger came into Arsenal, you know, and he was like, you know, what a change he made to Arsenal. And they went from boring Arsenal to, you know, absolutely fantastic Arsenal. And they had a bit of dominance. And that's when Ferguson got into Man U, and, you know, the battles that they had were absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we'd like to see that again. But it's that, firstly, getting the right person, and secondly, giving him the time. And unfortunately, these days, you know, managers don't seem to get the time.
Yeah. You know, the other week, and hi, Anthony, thanks for joining us.
Interesting comments, Anthony.
Yeah. You know, we spoke the other week about meaningless qualifying games.
Mm.
I'm just going to read this to you. England played Latvia tonight.
Ooh.
Do you know what the score was?
Oof, I hope it wasn't a draw.
No, England won 20-0.
Get in there. It's another one to celebrate.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it is absolutely pointless. Not just the men's game, the women's game as well. I mean, you know, 3-12-20 is when they scored the goals. 3-12-23, 6-9-49, 8. There's three people got hat tricks for England. No, four people. I tell a lie. Four people got hat tricks. There was a penalty in there. Oh, unbelievable. 20-0. What is the point? But
no, and it's that thing. You need to segment teams, and they've got to be on levels, and they've all got to be on a similar, you know, ability level. And you put the top teams together and the lower teams together, and you know, it just don't make any sense. And you know, it can't be nice for the Latvian team to, you know, they might have, you know, enjoyed walking on the pitch against England, but I don't see any honour in that when you come off losing.
They've not learned anything. Humiliation.
No, it's terrible. It's terrible.
I mean, Republic of Ireland beat Georgia 11-0. I bet they walked off the pitch going, "Yeah, we got the high score tonight, guys." I'm just trying to see where England. In our group, so we've played six games. We're top of our group. We're unbeaten because we've got 18 points. We've got a goal difference of plus 53. I mean, you know. But anyway, that's well done to the Lionesses. You absolutely should hold your hands up high. Embarrassing for Latvia. Embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing for FIFA. But well done, England ladies. Absolutely. You know, you've got to play these games. Well done. You know, so we're going to end up now very, very quickly. Just got one for you here, but we've got a fans' questions, and I promise you that it has got absolutely nothing to do with pigs. let me just find it now. It's going back to what we were talking about at the start. David said, on the subject you just commented on, which I think was the what was the first topic that we covered, about booing the players. As a player, is it very difficult to switch formations from game to game? So 3-5-2, 4-2-3-1. Is it easy to recall new roles assigned to you?
Good question, David. It's I was talking about this the other day on something else, and it was the fact that in my time, I think I played more in a back three than I did a back four, but I played a lot of my junior football and then reserve football before I sort of started playing a lot of first team football professionally as a back four. But I think it was when Liverpool went to the back three, and all of a sudden it became trendy and a few teams tried it out. And, you know, I was at Wednesday and, you know, we tried it out under David Plea. And the thing is, David, you've got to think that as a player, you're playing in that one position. So I was a centre-back. If I played in a back four, which, you know, so the first game I played for Leicester against Sheffield United, played a back three. It was disastrous. You know, it was a bad game. And the second game, we went into a back four, but Walsh came back into the team. And to be fair to me and him and Simon Grayson and Mike Whitlow, we forged a really good back four, and sometimes it just clicks like that. And it wasn't, it was never a problem to me. I can imagine it being to some players, and I can imagine a player who's, if he's either lacking in pace or lacking in something else or lacking in height, might want the comfort of a back three. It didn't really faze me, because if you played in a back four, your fullback didn't really wander off if he was on the opposite side of the pitch to the ball. So if it was down the right, the left back would tuck in and make a three anyway. And it was just a bit different with wing backs where they went across. So it's a good question, David. It never really affected me, but I can imagine some players being in the comfort zones, playing in certain positions, in certain formations. Some people born to be wing backs, but don't really want to be a fullback because they're probably not great defenders. And I'm not saying this guy's not a great defender, and I can't remember his name, but he's playing for Ireland at the minute, and he's the right wing back for Rotherham United. And I can't remember his name, and he's absolutely fantastic. He just gets the ball and he's so positive. I couldn't see him being a right back, but he's a fantastic right wing back, and he's doing ever so well. So I hopefully, David, that answers your question.
I'm just having a look if I can. Oh, that's the ladies' team. I won't be able to find you, will I? I think I'll just have a look because they've won well tonight. And of course, it's the ladies' team. Yeah. As Brad says here, just the close 20-0 win for the Lionesses. Apparently, Brad, what you don't know is that Harry Kane had actually contacted the FA to see if he could play tonight so that he could get the record. Allegedly, of course, you know. But Julian, as always, mate, not only are you top tee, you're a top man as well.
Can I just say hello to, is it Ankit who's out in India? Because I've got some very good friends in India who've got a hotel out there. So I've been out there to Goa, to Bogmalo Beach, and it's a fantastic place. Absolutely love them to bits. Very good morning to you too, Ankit. And I've experienced Goa for 10 days, and unsurprisingly, Chris, there was lots of drink, but there was lots of fantastic food and company and music. And I'm looking forward to going back there sometime soon.
Was that film based on your time over there? You know the one I'm going to say, the Exotic Marigold Hotel 1 and 2.
To be fair, my dad's been going out there for about 20 odd years, maybe 30 years, and it was his 70th. And so the two guys who own the hotel are actually, one of them, I think one or both, were ex-footballers in India. And they've got this hotel out there, and they're like, firm, they come over and stay at my dad's, and the firm friends of our families. And I've got to say, I went out there for 10 days, and to say I was looked after, Chris, is an understatement.
I'm going to watch those films now and just see if I can see which one is based on you. I can't wait for next week to see who's going to have you as their top totty.
Neither can I. I'll send some clips over, hopefully.
We'll send them to Karen at HM Prison Holloway. I've got her address. And I'm sure the governors would like to vet them as well before they go through. Julian, no, seriously, mate, you're a top man. Thank you so much for doing this.
No, it's all enjoyed it, Chris.
It's great. Stay safe, and I will see you see you next Tuesday, if that's not meaning anything rude at all.
Absolutely, mate. See you later.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Cheers, Julian. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks to Julian there. Great guy. Comes on and does this for us every week. And it is great to see, because I come up with these topics for him. And, you know, like tonight's, is Bruin acceptable? And, you know, I only ever see it from a fan's perspective, where he can put it across, obviously, from a player's perspective. And it's, you know, surprising how much we agree on and what have you. Whether that means I'm good or he's just awful, I don't know. Make it up. Well, third time I've got through it and I've not had to suck a fisherman's friend. He's sat in my lounge and he'll be devastated. He's been waiting all night. He went, no. I went, no, I'm all right at the moment. But we're not going to be back tomorrow because I am off to St. Mary's. And like I say, and hopefully I'll be able to have a chat with Alan Bennett when we get there. I haven't seen him for a long time. The first match I've been to, first league match I've been to since COVID. And obviously the second match, if you include the English Super Cup. And last time, me and Alan went to a Thursday match away at Southampton in the winter. I've said it many times, it was 9-0. We're going to be back with this on Thursday, though. Yes, we are indeed, because I say I'm going to be back late tomorrow and I don't think you'd want to be coming on at 1 o'clock in the morning. Brad and myself will be doing the post-match show Thursday at 7 o'clock, and we are going to be joined by the one and only, you've seen him on our show many, many times, Jack from Match Day Vlogs. Big Southampton fan, loves his coloured shirts. Yeah, that's the one. And he's promised, as long as it's not sort of 9-0 again, that he'll come on and have a chat with us about it. And then that's on Thursday at 7 and Thursday at 9. It's the preview prediction show with X-Fox Steve Linux. And we'll be looking ahead to the weekend's games when we have we go to Villa. Three shows done, three shows over. I need to go and get something really nice and cold down my throat. I think it's going to have to be a cider. Thanks for everything. Thanks for joining. Thanks for sticking with me throughout the night. I feel like I've done a marathon. I'll see you on Thursday. Come on, let's hope I can bring the 3 points back with me from St. Mary's tomorrow. Good night, guys. See you Thursday.
Thank you for watching. Have a Merry Christmas. And a happy new year.
Hello, Matt Elliott here.
Hi, Alan Smith here.
Hey guys, Ian Hume here.
Hi everybody, Jerry Taggart here.
Be sure to watch
Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV
for all the latest Leicester City news and information.
You can also subscribe on YouTube and various social media channels
for the latest updates and news on Leicester.
Come on, you foxes.
Podcast Network.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.